You know, it's very interesting. The great German philosopher, Peter Sloterdijk, whom you now have all been introduced to, he gained his fame in one of his early books, maybe it was his first, called The Critique of Cynical Reason, in which he was able to describe very accurately how the collective consciousness in the modern, and of course worse in the postmodern period, has been indoctrinated into cynicism. A cynicism that rejects truth. It rejects the reality and even the possibility of truth, with a capital T. And it rejects the possibility of God. It rejects the possibility of spirit. It rejects the possibility of transcendence. And it rejects surrender, most of all, even if it has some theoretical construct that is theistic. But the actuality of surrender cannot be attained because it's embedded in the programming of the cynical ego that it must never surrender its pseudo-autonomy to another. This is what in the modern period is idealized as individualism. And the whole process of therapy, including that of Jungian therapy, has been taken in by this ideal of individuation. When the whole problem is that the individual ego, which is a completely fabricated delusion in the first place and is pinned to an identification with a mortal body and a very limited capacity for autonomy and independence, is given the task of never being vulnerable to the influence of an other who might be able to offer wisdom and a path out of the labyrinth of illusion, because it puts one in a state of dependence. And so the ego remains with this pseudo-independence that refuses to make any commitment to an apprenticeship to a higher understanding that can be in such unconditional devotion that it can tolerate the hacking away of its ego illusion that it clings to so tenaciously. And because it refuses to bear any pain caused by another, it will not undergo the surgery that is required for the egoectomy that must be gained in order to create the space for the grace of God to enter into the consciousness. And then, you know, in Sloterdijk's magnum opus, which is a trilogy of three gigantic books that are interestingly titled Bubbles, Globes, and Foam is the last one. And he very interestingly analyzes the history of the transition from the ancient to the medieval to the modern period, as it is called, since the conventional history does not include earlier yugas. And he postulates that in the ancient world, we lived within a single global consciousness, because everyone recognized the reality of that we were created by the mind of God and still and always within the mind of God, that is the ultimate globe or hypersphere in which our existence manifests. But then in the middle period, especially it happened collectively in the West during that period that is known now as the Renaissance, but with the birth of science via Galileo, Copernicus, and that group, and the burning at the stake of Giordano Bruno, on the other hand, that created the path of objective scientism as the progressive form of humanistic development. And in this situation, the individual became the empirical judge of the criteria of truth. And so the world broke up into bubbles. But those bubbles depended on objective confirmation of whatever realities one considered to be valid. And that objective field of agreement, collective agreement, became a bubble. It's no longer within the field of cosmic reality, which is now an open-ended infinite space that's uncontained by the presence of God or goodness or providence. And we are ruled by chance in this doctrine. And then the bubble, which of course depends upon collective agreement and of a necessity of a meeting of the minds, soon became impossible because of the various different systems of belief that began to unfold as science itself broke up into differential disciplines that no longer communicated fully with each other, as now we see that biology doesn't really communicate with quantum physics, nor with chemistry, and certainly none of them with psychology, nor psychology with theology. So we have this consciousness now in which the bubble has popped, and there is no longer a grand narrative that can hold the world together. This was the announcement of François Lyotard in his book on the postmodern period. And then finally, as Sloterdijk says, now we have all been reduced to tiny foam particles, and everyone has their own truth, their own approach to reality, their own gender, their own antagonisms, their own attempts to create some kind of a coherent sense of the world and of who they are. But there is no longer any cultural agreement that holds the center together. No center that holds the periphery together. But it's very interesting that it's in this period in which the collapse of consciousness into not only external fragmentation, but an internal foam of within the ego itself, which has broken up into conflicting drives and attitudes and superego demands and projections that can never sustain any coherent object constancy or subject constancy. And so there is always an internal vibratory oscillation, a struggle that is going on, because the subconscious no longer communicates with the conscious, and the conscious no longer has a clue about accessing the superconscious. and the capacity of the mind to comprehend and therefore be in equanimity and stability and an appreciation of the developmental thrust that is occurring both within and without at a level that is beyond the autonomous desire or capacity to grasp of the ego mind, leaves it out of sync with the real. And so its imaginary constructs can no longer cover over what is accelerating and morphing too quickly to be able to veil in its monstrous and groundless revelation of the unthinkable, the horrific, the too awful to think could ever have happened. And the mode of unfoldment within the sphere of disinformation of the media and the appropriate cynicism even of all of the alternative voices that create simply a chaos of different paranoid conspiracy theories, but offer nothing for the consciousness to be able to make use of in order to function with absolute karmic accuracy. It's this situation in which, in the total darkening of consciousness, the grace of God is simultaneously being revealed. The original yogis, in some myths, the Adi Yogi was Dakshinamurti, and in other myths with other names, usually this being is either a docetic apparition of Shiva or a human embodiment or being possessed by Shiva consciousness, but that absolute presence within the original yogis, let's put it in the plural, were conveyed entirely in silence. There were no teachings. Yoga was never a system of doctrine or a belief or even of practice. You know, religion became a set of practices, whether ritualistic or somatic or mental, but the act of Sat Yoga is not actually a practice, but the realization through the flatlining of the ego consciousness of the presence that is always already complete, full, and absolutely mature in its consciousness of the absolute truth of what is happening and what is in the virtual and the non-existent levels of the real that are the sources of the unfoldment of what seems to be phenomenally occurring. And so it was in the transmission via silence that yoga was propagated.